podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, we are back. Welcome back to Kidder Street Noise. Happy New Year to everyone. Well, I say Happy New Year. It's probably been a miserable one from like a Blackburn Rovers perspective.
Yeah, Happy New Year. Now we're about to spend 45 minutes or however long morning.
Yeah. Enjoy this first couple of minutes where we talk about the Christmas period and New Year and new starts and just the same old problems for the next 45 minutes. So, Lewis is fresh from working on the darts. How was that experience?
Yeah, it was great. It was like a long tournament, and I only had 2 days off. I had the 23rd and 27th off. Came back off Christmas, but I mean, it wasn't like too bad because I only ended up doing two double sessions. Like, the double sessions are hard work when you're doing like day after day.
Long days, yeah.
It was, like, yeah, about 13 hours, and then like you go into bed and you're getting up and you're literally going straight back to work. I only did two of them in the end. I was like mainly doing the evening sessions. It was brilliant. You know, it's like the Worlds I've watched every year since I was a kid, and you know, to work on it this year, it was good.
Quite a good tournament to work on. It wasn't as predictable as some people imagined it to be. Obviously, there's been a lot of talk around Luke Littler, a 16-year-old darts wonder kid, 30-year-old wonder kid. That obviously burst onto the scene, but it was actually a good tournament. It wasn't just your predictable go and walking through everyone. I don't really know who else is top of the game nowadays. But like, there's usually like the same names towards the top end most years, isn't there? But whereas I feel like this tournament,
four semi-finalists, and you've got, you know, Scott Williams and Rob. I know Rob Frost has won before, but you know, he's not always been that consistent since he won it. So you know, just to have, and obviously Little getting to the final and debut, just have a different final four, and you know, it was just an unpredictable tournament overall. Really, and it was, you know, great to be a part of.
Right, so all good stuff done. Let's go on to Blackburn Rovers. We've got topics to talk about, but there's not really much focus on the games. Obviously, with Lewis working over Christmas, didn't really get to see much of the game, just in the highlights. I watched the games, but what I remember of the games is just, I'm trying my best to force it out of mind and forget about it, but I just can't. So we've gone for like a off the pitch sort of topics, and also tied into what's happened over the last 3 or 4 weeks. So I'm going to start with defensive wars. Probably highlighted, against Rotherham at home, that's probably where it was mostly highlighted. The two goals we conceded are very cheap. And at home to a team bottom of the league, you can't be conceding goals like that.
Yeah.
I think we're poor from set pieces, both attacking and defending. A lot of people have come out and said Wolstead should be stronger, and I do think he should be. But no one should be winning a header inside our 6-yard box. Is it just a defense? Is it just a goalkeeper problem? What do you think it's down to?
I don't think you can put it just down to Wolstead. I know he has been poor, but let's face it, it's not the same standard of what we've had in Kaminski for the last few seasons. That's just how it is. I think obviously there's been a lot of criticism over the last few days, aimed at Ben Benson, because he's got this role as like goalkeeper and set piece coach. Well, all of that criticism can only be seen as fair, I think, because we must be, I'm not seeing like any like stats recently, but we must be one of the worst teams not just defensively, but offensively, at set pieces. I can't remember last time we scored from like a free kick or a corner. I mean, there's not been many, if any, this season, I don't think.
We scored one where Adam Wharton crossed it to Scott Wharton a couple of weeks ago. I can't remember who that was against.
That was a Bristol City game.
Yeah, the Bristol City game. So
that's
the first one where he's like into the box and Wharton's got his head on it. And like the amount of times we've seen Carter, Wharton, Higham all come up from the back, go into the box and take a short corner and work out nothing really.
Yeah.
I mean, I do kind of understand that, because if you look at the, like, I'm a big believer in stats. Like, I've had a lot of disagreements with people about Wolstead or Purs. If you look at Wolstead's save percentage, I think it's up like 72-73%, which is good for a championship goalkeeper. Every four shots he's only conceded one, whereas I think Purs last season was down, like, one of the worst in the championships, down at 63%. So every three shots on target, one of them's going to go in, which obviously over a full 46 game season you're going to concede a lot more. That's just how low of average is. Also from set pieces, like corners, I think they come to like less than a percentage of goals like come from a corner, but that percentage does go up if you take a short corner. So I do kind of understand it in a way. I think if you're just taking a direct corner into the box, you're making it easier for the defence to just mark someone and get the head on the ball, or if you take it short, move it about a bit, they're going to move, they're going to leave people. But realistically, you're not going to plan your whole game around scoring from corners. Defensively, though, I mean, if you know that your keeper's, I mean, I don't know, he must be quite tall, Leo. He looks like a tall keeper, but he's not like massive, he's not a built goalkeeper. He's not going to strong and like come and knock someone over and catch the ball or punish the ball. Would it not be better to just stand on your line and just make a save from the header? Because even though Morrison's headed it inside the 6-yard box, it's not rocketed into the back at net. I think if you stand on your line there, it's quite a simple save for the goalkeeper. So does that not come back to goalkeeping coach, manager saying, listen, we know you're not comfortable doing that, just stay on your line, save the second ball. If the ball lands in 6-yard box and they have a free header, so be it. But you're almost giving them a chance to just bounce off someone and bounce into an empty net if you come out and don't
claim anything. You don't think by him continuing to come out and trying to punch and claim balls from set pieces and crosses, he's just trying to like compensate for a few of the blunders that he has made. He's like trying to like assure people, like maybe assure himself as well, you know, and trying to like fake the confidence. But if he's not comfortable with that, if he doesn't feel, you know, that's one of his stronger abilities as a goalkeeper, then like you say, he should like take that different approach, definitely. And he should be encouraged to do that by the coaches.
Yeah, I mean, I know what you mean. He might be feeling the pressure because of his recent run of form and think, no, I'll come out and catch one and it'll put everyone at ease. But I mean, that's like a double-edged sword, isn't it? Like, yeah, if you catch it, great, fantastic. But if you come out and drop one, like you come out and drop one in the first five minutes, even if they don't score, like for the rest of the game, your head's up your ass, basically. And like the whole Blackburn end are like chewing on the nails for 90 minutes. So I do, I mean, he must know himself that's not one of his strengths. Like I've already said about statistics and shot stopping, that is his strength. So like, if that is your positive as a goalkeeper, stay on your line and save the shot. Why are you trying to come out and clip? He is like statistically better at coming out and claiming crosses and getting punches on crosses than Purs. So I'm not saying that it's his weakness. He is statistically better at that. But recently, mistakes have come from it, and it's going to be highlighted. It's not been a problem all season. It's just been these last 4 or 5 weeks where it seems like everything he's punched or not fully got hold of has resulted in either a shot on target or a goal, like the two at Hull, not Hull, who scored two late goals and beat us 2-1.
Watford.
Watford, yeah.
Well, it was the long game against Watford, then.
Yeah, so obviously the two shots from the edge of the box were after he's punched, and I know probably like a top goalkeeper pushes him away to the left and right, and we'd go on and either get a draw or keep the win. But there's still good saves after you've had to set yourself again, and it's come through a body of like 14 people inside the box. Like they're still two good saves. It's just unfortunate that either we've not reacted or he's pushed it just not wide enough, and it's fallen back to one of their strikers. They put it into an empty net. So for me, it's got to be stay on your line, save the shot. This is what you're good at. Like, just focus on that. It doesn't make sense that we're almost seen, like, almost taking that away from a player. Like, you wouldn't have a fast player and then tell him not to run in behind, come to feet for everything. I know we did, we had him on strong for years, but...
Makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. I don't think the defence are blameless. The two goals we conceded at Hull away, the first one's just way too easy for Liam Delap, and the second one where it's bouncing for 3-4 bounced into the box is, I mean, I know Haim's not fully fit at the minute. Is it just lack of fitness, lack of match sharpness, or do you think there's also a lack of confidence in Wallstead because of recent weeks that's affecting him?
I think there's a lack of confidence in Wallstead. I think there's a lack of confidence throughout the team, to be honest. Poor run. Maybe a bit of fatigue creeping in just because of the amount of injuries we've got. And obviously the festive period is, it's very congested time for the amount of games. I think, and probably the biggest example of that lack of confidence would be in that game against Hull, when we did get level just before half time, and we're going in at half time, you'd expect us to come out kind of like all guns blazing and be looking for the win. Whereas, like, there was none of that. There was no kind of like determination. They just kind of seemed a bit like happy with like getting back level. And I don't know. I think it's really low on confidence at the minute.
Yeah. I think we've found out a bit as well. When I watched the whole game, but like our back four was sat 10 yards into their half, passing the ball from side to side, looking to open up channels, and Hull were happy to sit with 10 men in their own half and just wait for us to eventually give the ball away and then knock a long ball up to Delap and Connolly and try and make something stick, or hopefully get Connolly in behind like he did in the home game, and obviously put two goals past Purs and won the game. So last season we changed like style of play, and we were probably an unknown quantity to most teams. Like that first half of the season, where just before the World Cup break we were second, like going into World Cup break, and then like we've carried on this style of play and more teams have decided to sit off us and just wait till we eventually give the ball away before they spring their own attacks. The problem is now, how do you change it? Because if every team's going to sit back against us, how do you change your player? Because you can't just sit back yourself, because that's just, it's going to be two teams sitting back, just not doing anything. So how do we go about changing that?
That's a big question. You'd hope with recruitment, you know, with new bodies in January to strike us with, you look, for me, it really kind of like hit home when you, for the Watford game, you saw the bench, and you were like, if at any point in this game, we're under the cosh, and we need someone to come off the bench and hopefully win us a game or rescue a point or something, there's nothing on the bench there to help us out in that. And there's that youngster, Talalovic, who's, we didn't really know anything about him, signed him, still hasn't scored yet, still improving. So, yeah, there's big issues at the minute. I think it just feels really flat. I think just both on, I know we played some nice football against Watford, but in that second half, when we'd gone in at half time 1-0 up, I feel like we use this word quite a lot, determination. It never really felt like there was any determination to kill that game off. We had chances and we had the goal ruled out, didn't we? But yeah, it felt a bit odd, really. And I think that same kind of flatness is, I can feel it at Ewood as well. Even though it was a bigger crowd that day, you felt it, that the atmosphere wasn't what I was expecting from a crowd that big.
No.
But everything just feels a bit flat at the minute, but
I mean, just going off,
the main
going
thing.
back to the Watford game there, you mentioned about like the flatness, and I think they made like three or four subs around the 60-minute mark, and they brought the right back on who just bombed on, were just constantly bombing down that right hand side, and it gives like their whole team and their whole fans like a momentum shift. Whereas I don't feel like we have a substitute that can do that. Like every person we bring on, the Blackburn end just seem to go, oh, he's coming on. Like number comes up.
You're just hoping that, rather than trusting them, you're hoping in them. That's how I feel with our bench.
I feel like it's been a
No,
while since we've had a
that's
player where the board comes up and like the Blackburn end's like, yeah, come on, he's gonna
yeah.
come. The last time I remember it was probably when Dak came on back from his injury. And
Yeah.
obviously won the penalty that he ended up missing, we ended up losing the game. But that sub, that noise where the fans believe that this sub is going to change the game,
Yeah.
I cannot remember the last time a sub came on and we thought, yeah, this is going to change it for us.
No.
And that was highlighted in the last game where he brought on Ennis and Markandé. And I mean, I tweeted that I don't think either of them would get a game for any other championship club. It's probably a bit harsh on Ennis, probably not seen enough of him, but Markandé has been here for a number of years now. I've never really seen it in him. Obviously went to Aberdeen for that length of time and couldn't get a kick of a ball up there when they were having a really poor season for Aberdeen standards. So I mean,
Yeah.
it's not the subs you want to be making, and he looks low on confidence. He's like every pass he made was backwards. He weren't taking anyone on, and I've said to people around Ewood that we're not taking people on. We get to the edge of the box, stand the defender up, and then roll the ball backwards. Whereas I think even just it only takes a dangled leg, and especially like nowadays, like the slightest contact that wins you a penalty. But we don't take enough people on to win these set pieces. It's just like
Yeah.
constant recycling of the ball.
Do you think that there's been a lot of talk about how the project has changed? We've heard it, time and time again now, really, since the summer, with the changes to the budget. Do you think the goalposts for this season have just been completely moved now? Because that's almost what it feels like. That it's just kind of like, oh, we'll just settle for, especially with the squad we've got, and I don't see. I just spoke there about recruitment and how what we really need is a strong transfer window this month to revitalize the season and how we're playing.
I mean, a lot of people
But
have like talked about the
we can't see
goalpost
out.
moving, and obviously JDT made the comments that Waggett made in the summer about just avoiding relegation. Again, I think we'll pick up enough points to be nowhere near that, and I still think we're in with a chance. As mad as that sounds, like with how bad this last month's been, we're only 9 points off the playoffs with a lot of game time to play. We've seen it before. It only takes like two wins on the bounce, and you're back within 4 points. And you win your next game, they lose. You're only 1 point off, and it doesn't take like just like it hasn't taken long for like us to go from oh we're doing all right to holy shit we're going down and the club's going bust. Like it also doesn't take long for you to win 3 games in a row, and then all of a sudden oh my god we're going up and we're gonna go to the FA Cup semi-final and win the cup and like we'll have a big day out at Wembley. Like it genuinely doesn't take that long. So yeah,
the hope is that we'll do something like what Coventry did last season, where they just kind of like peaked at the right time and just kind of like snuck in the back door. They only spent like 18 days in the playoffs, but you know, for that to happen, we've got to get people back fit, haven't we?
Yeah.
You know, we've got some key players still out, and you know, you're looking at when a lot of them are going to be returning. You're talking about February, maybe early March, and that is the time, you know, you'd be looking to start picking up points if you were to do something like that. But we've got to get bodies in. I know we've reportedly activated the release clause for the defender from Crewe. Is it
Reardon?
Or Reardon, yeah. Weren't we linked to him in the summer as well? I'm sure I can remember his name at some point, but
I can't remember. I mean,
that's £500,000, but he's another young lad, so
yeah. I mean, going back to that momentum switch, so we play Cambridge this Saturday, which will be tomorrow when the podcast comes out. Obviously, chance to play your players that haven't been featuring as much, get a few goals, get a few assists, hopefully. I mean, I'm saying like we've already won the game, but you'd expect us to beat Cambridge on Saturday. And then we've got West Brom away, which obviously is a tough game. They're having a really good season. But then you've got Huddersfield at home. I know they've just spanked at their place, but they are still down there. They are still struggling. Then got Cardiff away, which is a bit of a bogey ground for us. Are they still with Ernie Slot? Is he still the manager? I don't remember him being sacked, so he must be.
He is.
I mean, they're like up near the playoffs, but I still don't think like they're miles better than us, or a big improvement on us. QPR at home, Stoke at home, Birmingham away are three massive games before we play Preston away. So
yeah,
obviously QPR at home is for me a must win with another team down there. Stoke, I know they've just got a new manager, but they haven't had the best seasons again. And we usually do quite well against Stoke at home. Birmingham away, that'll completely depend on who they hire between now and then, because the squad is still good enough. It's just under Rooney, they've just been absolutely tepid.
Yeah.
So you could potentially be going into that Preston game only a couple of points off top six, or you could be going into like 6 points off relegation. It completely depends, doesn't it?
There is a lot of winnable games there, though, and you know, a lot of games that you're looking at and you're thinking, you know, that could completely change things around for us.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we won't go into like past Preston, because we'll see where we are at that point, and then we'll see what the realistic is. But as for like goalpost moving projects and stuff, I still think our aim needs to be doing well in the cup and aiming for as high as possible after that. I think as soon as you start turning around and looking over your shoulder saying we need to avoid relegation, I think it, like, the whole point of the Championship being such a good league is that everyone has hope, like everyone from 5th after a certain point down to 18th still thinks they can go up, and that is the whole point. As soon as you start saying, oh, we just want to avoid relegation, and we already know the fans are lower than what they should be, and if you take that hope away from the remaining fan base, then we really are in trouble, because
yeah.
So yeah, that's the first point ticked off. Going to move on to the coaching staff now. This is obviously JDT's second season in charge, getting to like, well, we've been 1.5 seasons in charge when we get to January window off, which is obviously now. We've still only had 2 backroom staff recruits from him, the assistant manager and one of the analysts, I think, one of his recruits. David Law's still there, Damian Johnson and Andy Watson, who's also a video analyst, all came in on us summer of 2017, so they're all hired at the same time as Mowbray. David Johnson obviously working with under 23 for quite a while, and we've obviously spoke about Ben Benson already, who was goalkeeper coach during that Mowbray era. Do you think not having that full change around in the background has almost hindered JDT? Like the...
I think it will have, yeah. So he's had to, like, he will have had to acclimatise to, you know, aside from his assistant manager, like you say, a whole new team. And I think if he had the choice and the financial situation was different at Rovers, then that'd be different. You know, the case would be different. And he would have his full team that he used at Malmo. So yeah, I'm sure that'll present a challenge to him. If he was being honest, yeah.
Do you think it is a financial thing? You said then probably not the money to replace them or get new ones in. I mean, having the goalkeeper coach, also your set piece coach, is just that's like massive alarm bells to me, because we've already spoke about his ability as a goalkeeper coach. Like, he's not improved the goalkeepers we've got now. Realistically, what does he know about set pieces?
It just kind of gives you the impression of that he's like a jack of, you know, a few trades and master of none, kind of. Yeah, I've seen that said about him on Twitter, and you know, when someone has more than one role like that, it just doesn't really seem like, and especially when it's been that role for quite a while, and we've struggled by the ability of Kaminski. You know, he was just naturally a good goalkeeper. You know, we've seen that as he's gone on to Luton, and he's doing well there. He's not really succeeded in the job, has he? Because we're terrible at set pieces, and I don't think any of the goalkeepers have actually improved.
I mean, Kaminski's probably improved since he's left us.
Yeah.
I mean, what I've seen of him this season in the Premier League. Raya, I'd say his distribution has definitely improved. I don't know about his actual goalkeeping, but his distribution, because how many balls are kicked into the Riverside when he were at Ewood? Surely your goalkeeper coach would have picked up on that, but obviously his Brentford coach after him has picked up on it and improved that. I can understand if it was like an attacking coach, like someone like Damian Johnson, who for years took corners at Rovers. Like, I can understand him doing his role and the set piece coach. That kind of makes sense. Like, he can show like set like whipping crosses in like he used to do when he was a player. I could understand that, but I don't want to say like goalkeepers aren't footballers technically. They're just the lunatic kid that wanted to dive around on tarmac when you were a kid. That's who the goalkeeper is. They weren't like the best player. I just find it crazy. And I was looking at the backroom staff as like a whole, and I saw the strangest thing I've ever seen. We've got a club advisor on the backroom staff list called Hannah Roberts, right? Now, she's been at Rovers as the advisor since 2021, I think it said, or 2020. But she's also the club advisor at Rangers. Which...
it makes you think, how, you know, what is she prioritising?
Yeah, so that I mean...
into what?
So there's two points about this. One, Rangers haven't exactly been the best club model to follow over the last few years. Like, some of the decisions they've made around the club. I know the other half of Glasgow are like, blame about, like, reducing allocations, like, managerial changes they've made up there, the recruitment up there, and, like, certain, like, releases that they've done on social media and whatever, and just there's certain slip-ups that a club shouldn't be making. That's my first point about why I don't think it's acceptable having her doing it for Rangers and us. Like, I can understand if it was like a really well run, like this is no disrespect to Rangers, obviously a massive club and like a great club, but the way it's been run recently isn't like the model that I want Blackburn Rovers to be following. And I, off the top of my head, I can't think of many clubs that I would. I mean, I'm trying to think who's like a good, like a well-run, probably like Ipswich Town. Like, Ipswich Town, like, sold out season tickets, like, good social media output, good sponsorship. I know they've got like a celebrity suit.
The same recent season as Brentford. I suppose their setup is different to ours.
Yeah.
They don't have an academy, do they?
No. They have that B team, don't they? So like, Ipswich, yeah. I'd say, probably in a similar position to us, similar ground, similar size town.
Yeah.
Similar history, apart from obviously, like, not probably not as successful as us. Well, probably are just as successful with the European Cups and stuff. But they're like the model to look at. Good recruitment, sold out season tickets, good sponsorship, good fan club relationship. So yeah, that's my first point. That's not the model that I would want someone else to be working on. Number two, I don't know how, if you're a club advisor at a club the size of Rangers, how you could afford to have a second job at a different club. Like, Rangers is a fishbowl. It's a 24/7 job. You cannot advise on Rangers, like, subjects and goings on and have time to go and advise on stuff about Blackburn Rovers as well. It just wouldn't happen, because every minor little story is like hugely magnified up there, and she will have to be working 24/7 to make sure that these things are worked on. So how does she have time to then come back down and work on the stuff that's happening at Ewood, which would feel minuscule compared to what's going on up there?
Yeah, to me, it just seems like another example of cost cutting. I'm going to talk about this probably a bit later on when we talk about Ewood. And I'm sure we'll mention what's been announced today about the Cambridge game on Saturday. yeah, that's what it is for me. Just, you know, we can't afford to employ someone in that role full time solely on Rovers. And so it's kind of like a half cooked job, you know, to fill that role, if you will.
Yeah. See, this is what I don't understand. Like, we can't afford to hire someone, but there must be someone who works within the community or works at Blackburn Rovers that would be a better, or like, would be willing to communicate with fans. There must be someone that is willing to be that liaison between the fans. Probably that not everyone will be able to agree on, but surely better than someone that they're going to pluck out of thin air that's currently working on a project at Glasgow Rangers. And like, do we? I don't know. I just find it absolutely crazy. Find it absolutely mad. We'll get onto that later on. We'll talk about the Ewood and like the surrounding and stuff. I'm going to get on to missing players now. So, we've got 6 players injured, is it? Off the top of my head. I've got yes. Gallagher, JRC, Purs,
Dolan,
Hedges is 5. Must be one more.
Yeah.
Scott Wharton now.
Scott Wharton.
So,
yes.
Is it, again, a lack of investment? Like, are the physios and the sports scientists not good enough? Is there a lack of investment on the sports science side of it? Is it just, I mean, Dan, it got announced the other day that Daniel Ayala's injured. Like, I think he got sent off, didn't he, before Christmas, and then he came back and played a game and got injured again. Did his usual trick. But seeing the replies, like, some Rovers fans like tweeting, like, oh, that's typical to Ayala this, and like, their fans are saying, oh, well, he's played most, like, majority of games for us. He's not really been like that. And I just think, like, is that because they're investing more in, like, the sports science side of it? Like, because we're picking up a lot of niggly injuries. It's not like, I mean, I looked at Middlesbrough's list. They've got a lot of injuries, but it's like, they've got Lenihan with an Achilles tendon tear, someone else done their ACL, someone else done ankle ligaments. Like, they're big injuries. It's not like, yeah, hamstring, groins, like that sort of stuff.
I think Galli is the one for me. When you look at him and you think, I know, like, when he is fully fit, and he starts a game, he works really hard, you know.
He's a workhorse.
He will. He puts a proper shift in. But you'd think with like level of fitness, he will be out now with like middle of his career. He shouldn't be getting injured as much, even though he works that hard. He shouldn't be getting injured as much as he does. So that's got to be, you know, pinned down to something.
Yeah.
Surely.
And like, why is it not being picked up earlier? Like, if he's, like, I mean, there's been a lot of, like, recently where he's like bringing Ennis off after 60 minutes and bringing Telovic off after 60 minutes, like, control the body, so like stop injuries and stuff. But is that just 60 minutes because it's a round number, or is it like sports science where they're tracking the heart rate and checking like their actual output? Because like, when you compare Ennis's like 60 minutes to Telovic's, I'm pretty sure it'd be completely different outputs and completely different heart rates. And like,
definitely,
where it feels at the minute is just, yeah, you can have 20 minutes because you've been injured for a bit, and you can start but have 60 minutes because you've been injured for a bit. Like, it's just a bit old school, you know what I mean? It's not, there doesn't seem to be many science or facts behind it. Do you agree?
Mm.
Or,
I'd say so. If you were to go about changing that and take a more modern approach, where would that decision come from? Whose job is it to, you know, to change the approach?
I mean, this is a problem when you have non-football people like deciding, making decisions at football, because they might not see the benefits of a better physio team or a better sports science department. They'll just say, well, like, to them it's just notes on a piece of paper, it's this much a year. It's not, oh well, it might stop as many injuries. And then I don't know, I mean, there's no scientific evidence that it would stop injuries, so you probably have to present that to them, saying we're a team like this, we'd be able to stop this many injuries, we'd have people playing every week that we're paying a wage for, you save money. But whether they'd actually listen to you and decide to invest money in the first place, I'm not 100% confident they'd do that. But it is what it is. I mean, these players need to come back, but it's not just about coming back, it's about staying back at the same time, isn't it? We can't have what Gallagher's doing, where he's coming back for a game and a half and then he's out for another 6 weeks because he just might as well not come back.
Yeah, I mean, he's only made, like, I was looking earlier and I was like, I should be Palace and Gallagher like all season. He's only made 5 appearances.
Yeah, it's something like 3 starts in our last 32 competitive games or something like that.
Yeah,
which is just for like a big earner and is not
and
good enough.
It's like no. So it's like reoccurring problems, really. A lot of it's like mostly his hamstring, his calf. It's a big problem.
Yeah, definitely. More off the field stuff now. So we're going to talk about Ewood Park in general and the fan experience, should we call it? I mean, Rebecca dropped me off when we played Watford on the fan takeover day and she was saying that, like, it doesn't, like, Ewood doesn't look nice, and she wouldn't believe me when I told her that the top of the stand is supposed to be white. Like, it's like grey now, it's dirty. Like, let's be honest, let's not beat around the bush, it's just not looked after. I think, like, obviously back when we were in the Prem years, we had a bit more money to spend, but it used to get painted like every 2 seasons or every 3 seasons. So you'd see people like walking on the top, painting all the metalwork and stuff. But surely that's not a big output, like having someone come around and just power wash the sides of the stadium.
You wouldn't think so, would you? I mean, I'm sure it was like last season the end of, well, not last season, now the end of the season before that, at summer 22, I'm sure that, like, in that summer, like, the metalwork around the top of the stands was cleaned, and there was, like, talk of, like, that cleaning, like, happening because it was going to be painted soon. And I don't think it ever was painted after that. Just, like, it wouldn't get surely as dirty as it's got since then. If it had been, because, I mean, Ewood does look, it looks grimy, doesn't it? It looks, yeah, it's a shame. It really is. But I think, we heard from Wagget at the start of the season, he was set on cost being cut absolutely everywhere because that's what needed to happen, according to him.
But it's just setting a bad standard. Just setting an awful standard around the club. Like when with how just it just like you said, grimy, grubby. It's just, I mean, the fan, the brick floor outside the Blues Bar. I don't notice it anymore because you can't see it. Like, has it ever been like power wash or jet wash so it looks like the original pink bricks that they were when they first got put in? Whereas now it's just like that grey browny colour with, like, you can almost make out the words now, but it's just like it wouldn't take someone.
To me, that, like, people that pay, like, the Hall of Fame thing, people have paid decent money for that, so that should be, like, maintained, and, like, if the words are, like, wearing away or whatever, it should be maintained and upkept, to how it was when it was originally installed.
Yeah, but if it was looked after, like, there was less dirt on it with people walking over to match days, it wouldn't get worn down, would it? It was like you brushed it up and cleaned it properly. The wearing down wouldn't happen as quickly as it is doing now because people are traipsing dirt over it because the ground is dirty. We also saw the other day that they'd taken the wall art, which was previously in the Blues Bar. They've not just took it out. It was previously in the Blues Bar when they did it up, and it was left outside the Blackburn End. They've now put it up on, like, the Riverside back wall. I don't really know where that is. I've never been around that side of the ground. But it just looks shit. That's the only way I can explain it. It just looks really...
It looks like they've just gone...
Where do we put
Houston Blues Bar. Where do we put it? Where do we put it where it looks like we've kind of, like, made some effort to, like, improve, that area of the ground? And, like, I've been to, like, in the home ends of, like, other clubs, stadiums, and, like, the concourses are, like, it's adorned of, like, timelines, and I went to Etihad not so long ago. I don't know, it's, like, a different level to us now, obviously, but they've just got, like, 99 when they won promotion at Wembley, Dickoff scored the winner, and, all the way through each year, and even though we're not on the same level as them, and, like, we probably won't be able to make it as good, like, we can still do something like that.
Yeah.
In the Blackburn.
But even the away end at the City, when we went in the Cup, it was like that away kit, so, like, famous teams they've played, like, sprawled all on the top. Like, it wasn't just about City, it wasn't, like, they'd obviously made an effort in the away end as well. But for me, that wall, like, if you wanted to improve that wall and make it all black and rotten, you could have commissioned someone to make some art, and you could have commissioned someone to come and spray it onto the wall and, like, actually have some sort of professional representation on that wall, not just, oh, we've got some old pictures here, let's just nail them to the wall here, and let's say we've done up the Riverside and charge up an extra fiver to come and see it, probably. I just find it absolutely crazy. I mean, I think Nathan Edmondson posted on Twitter today, like, a video of like a montage with I think it's like Kanye right away over the top. I was like we've got some really good creative people in like we've got the Oro on Instagram. I don't even know who runs that, to be honest. But obviously like people, the lads at Rovers Chat, Millie Wignall who does the photography at Darwin, like we've got some really good creative outlets in the fan base. Like why are we not using them?
I know it's like nothing to do with Rovers, it's like more like to with the Fox and Hounds, just like not the club itself but the fans. Like that that wall at the back of the Fox and Hounds where it has like the, let's be honest, the badly painted badge.
Yeah.
I just think that could be like a proper like mural or something, like you could like JDT or like Uncle Jack or whatever. You just think like pretty much every club has something like that somewhere around their ground. And no matter where you go, just like that's just what every club seems to do. It's like, you know, with our history as well.
Yeah.
Why can't we have? I think it'd just be perfect there, but.
Well, I mean, if you go to Anfield, if anyone like is ever in a Liverpool area, if you go around Anfield, like at every end of Terrace House, you will see like a piece of art. Like there's a big one of like if you're walking towards the like the Anfield Road end, like the opposite of the Kop, like there's a massive Ray Clements on just on the side of someone's house, like I think it's like his appearances and clean sheets or something like that. There's another one with Trent about being born in Liverpool, like being a Scouser. There's another massive one of Klopp, but like you'd think that with the surroundings of Ewood, so you've got obviously the side house at Fox and Hounds, you've got the White House on the corner, like on the corner of Blackman and Jack Walker, like it's a blank canvas. Like just ask the person who lives in there, do you mind if we do something on the side of this wall? Like I'm sure they wouldn't mind. Like even if you offer them a free season ticket, oh my god, free season ticket! Steve Wagg, I'm so sorry for suggesting the idea of a free season ticket. But just anything, like there's probably Blackman fans living in them houses that would be happy to offer you the side wall, and then you could use even if it's like trust, like funded, like if we get fans to donate, I'm sure people want to improve the Ewood experience and. By like even like a five or a tenner to raise as much money to, if we had a target set, like if we got a quote off a professional wall painter, I don't know what you call like a professional graffiti artist. If you got a quote off them and said this is what we're gonna do, like we've got someone to design it, it looks like this, like suggest any improvements, or if you want to donate to doing it, here's a link and raise £5,000, get it done. I think Wrexham did it for. When they won promotion, it was like Paul Mullin and two others. Like I think they raised like £3,500 paint. And it's like a massive mural on the side of the Terrace House. It looks amazing. I just think
that's like the quote. Some of the quotes that JDT came out of last season during the cup run. I think it was like before the Sheffield United game. It was about like living through the club, you know, living for the club and. How the club is like part of the town and our identity. Like, imagine how good those quotes would look on a mural or something. Like, it just, it would probably won't happen. That's
good. I mean, with the legends we've got in our history, you could fill every end terraced house in the town.
Yeah,
like you could have one, like you said, the Fox and Hounds would be perfect for like Jack Walker lifting the trophy, and then you could have another one with like Colin Endre with a bloodied headband, and then you could have. Obviously Shearer and Sutton on one, you could have Sherwood with Duff, Jansen, Court, like literally the names would roll off the tongue and you could just paint every single wall in the town. But which moves us on to our next point about the Liverpool and Man United Legends Night. Now this wasn't like promoted by the club. Someone found this on Twitter, I think it was Josh.
No wonder it wasn't promoted by the club.
Yeah. So on February 29th of Feb, they are hosting a Liverpool Legends Night with Peter Beardsley, Ronnie Whelan and Jan Molby at Ewood. I mean, I don't know where the demand for this night has come from. I don't know many Liverpool fans in Blackburn, and I don't know why they would come to Ewood to celebrate Liverpool legends. It just, the whole thing just doesn't make sense. And it wasn't that long ago that Peter Beardsley was getting sacked and banned from football for racist behaviour whilst he was working at Newcastle. So, like, with the amount of club promotion and club values around, like, kick it out, say no to racism, and then obviously all the good work they're doing with the buses. I can't think what the thing's called. What's the Yasir Sufi bus thing called? Like, there's free school tickets and stuff.
Oh, Ewood Express.
Ewood Express, yeah. So all the great work we did that, and like obviously creating new relationships with like new communities and everyone coming together, and then to have a like convicted racist do a Legends Night at Ewood Park. Is it like Hannah Roberts, club advisor? What are you doing? Like, do you not get a say in this? Do you not think like, you know what, this will actually upset a lot of fans, let's not do this? Find it crazy. And I don't know how it's going to be a sawn after night. Not really many scouts coming over to that.
Even if like you're one of the legends, like turning up, like why are you doing this? Like,
why are we here?
Yeah.
You know,
it's, I don't know. And especially like I said, Peter Beardsley, with like his recent history, it's just, I think it's just a club like taking money because they kind of like need to.
Yeah, but they're selling you, like selling your stadium and selling your soul, and
yeah, it's just not what serious football clubs do.
No,
it's kind of a theme running through this, and that's what it comes down to, is that seriousness, professionalism. It's just. Not right.
No,
that's as much you can say, really.
I mean, the Liverpool one's definitely the worst one. The Man United Legends one, I could almost understand. We've got Andy Cole, Keith Gillespie, and David May. Is the third one?
Yeah.
I mean, the advertisement for the night doesn't make sense. Like, they don't mention them ever playing for Blackburn Rovers.
It could be anywhere. Yeah.
I wouldn't call it a Blackburn Rovers Legends Night, but you could say like Worthington Cup winners Keith Gillespie and Andy Cole and David May join us on Blackburn Rovers guest speakers night, and they'll talk about the whole careers as well as the time at Blackburn Rovers. I can understand that, but the way they've worked it and the way they've marketed it, and the fact that the club is staying silent about it, like if the club promoted it like that, I'd go to it. I'd go to an listen to Andy Cole and Keith Gillespie. Like, Keith Gillespie's had quite an interesting career and life in the background. It'd be somewhat good to go to, but just like the silence around it and the way it's marketed just makes it feel really uncomfortable.
Yeah, they can. The fact that they haven't even mentioned it just speaks volumes, doesn't it? It just.
It's a bit of shame, do you think?
You're off. Yeah, without a doubt, I think. Yeah. They're just aware of the reaction that it would get if they did publicise it.
Yeah, but like, if you're a club advisor, like, and you said, and people are offering you this show as a Man United Legends Night, you could say, well, yeah, this is like, we'll have it, but we wanted it marketed like this. Because if they'd have put a statement out saying, like if they would have marketed it like that, if Rovers would have spoke first rather than just finding out this way, I think if they do it now, it's too late. Like they've missed the bus now. If they'd have come out and said we're gonna have a guest speaker night in February or March, whenever it is, it's gonna be these three former players come down. It's not just a Blackburn Rovers thing. They're gonna talk about the whole career, but they will, whilst they're here, obviously talk about Blackburn Rovers and answer questions on Blackburn Rovers. Great, they'd sell out, but
yeah,
I don't know. You just want to grab people and shake them, and it's annoying because the only way to get in touch with them is, or like I say, get in touch with them, but the only way to like that, this is why we organise this podcast, to have a rant, because I felt like we needed to get loads off our chest. and 280 characters on Twitter just isn't enough to like just scream at them.
Not even Twitter blue,
just to rant at Rovers. Yeah. Paid £8 off just to slate the Rovers social media team. But yeah, I mean, do you know what's annoying, right? Everyone can see it. Everyone that we speak to about like Rovers can see it. Like, obviously, we're speaking to the lads from Rovers Radio and like Chris Martin, Josh Harding, a lot of people we speak to on match days and stuff. We all say the same things, and it's all plainly obvious to us. So why are these people that are like hired to make these decisions and deal with the day-to-day run of the club, why can they not see it like we can? Is it just because they're not football people and we are?
I think it's a bit of that. I think it's also, I think it's just, I know I keep saying it, but the financial situation, like, you just have to keep going back to that. That's what they're thinking about, I think, all the time. And like anything else is just...
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be a financial situation, does it? Because... I mean, the first one, the Liverpool one, yeah, be ashamed. I don't want anything to do with that. I don't want to touch that. The United one, you could spin that in your own way. If you were clever, and you don't even have to be clever about it. I've thought of it in 5 minutes. Like the former Rovers players, mark it as a Rovers guest speaker night. You could do it with a number of teams. Like the big. Yeah. I mean, you could have a Rangers night. And have,
it's like, you know.
Go on.
Just going into like 2024, so it's like about to like, you know, getting towards like the 30th anniversary of, you know, winning the Premier League. So it's not, but it's like you could have like, if the club wanted to do something like that, they could do it through themselves, not a third party thing, an actual Rovers thing, where it's like former Rovers players from the time, Shearer, Hendry, whoever, and then you could have like former United players as well, and like because that was the rivalry of that. That time you could do like a, you know, get like three former United players from that time, and you know, just have like a Q&A set. Like you could do something like that, and that would definitely sell.
Yeah
I think
definitely. And even if you had like, I mean, I'm sure like if Kenny Dalglish was speaking, I'm sure you could get someone like Sir Alex Ferguson speaking down here. Like it, players are proud, yeah, to like have Black Rovers in the history, and are more than willing to do these sort of events for us, but rather than organising it ourselves and like setting it up and sell the tickets, we'd rather let some third party marketing that are just, they look cheap and lazy. Like I did the ChatGPT prompt to like try and work out an advert for the Dwight York one. I think mine was better than theirs. They've obviously just, I don't know. Let's move on before I smash shit on my screen. So, the last one that we'll talk about, or the last one that I want to talk about, Lewis might have more afterwards, is obviously what came out today. So, the digital day pilot is paused ahead of match day. I'll read the full statement out, and then we'll talk about it. So, the club would like to update supporters ahead of our Emirates FA Cup third round tie against Cambridge United. As announced previously, the club are striving to reach a number of objectives from both a sustainability and digital perspective, and the launch of a dedicated digital day has been a beneficial pilot for achieving these goals. As we approach match day, we will be pausing the pilot scheme from 9 a.m. tomorrow, which will be Friday, so this will be out, to allow supporters who have not yet successfully navigated the digital purchase process to attend the match. Whilst the digital process has worked well, with a number of supporters managing to switch to a digital and more sustainable form of ticketing, we do not want to be a barrier to anyone wishing to attend the match. Your support is crucial to the team, and we hope that we feel it on Saturday as we get our FA Cup campaign underway. Ticket operations will return to normal throughout Friday and Saturday in the lead up to our 3 p.m. kickoff. The club will be looking at other pilot formats for the future to continue our journey towards being more sustainable and the digital ticketing processes. It talks about the ticket prices and where to purchase your tickets. What were your first thoughts when you saw the news?
I just thought it was laughable, to be honest. So it's such a mess, and it's it's obvious that they've just panicked, haven't they? They've seen whatever else has seen today, the ticket map.
The ticket map, the map of Ewood.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. There's a lot of blue compared to not much grey, and they've just been kind of, the hand's been forced. Because there's no need to do it in the first place. When things aren't going smoothly anyway, and they haven't been since what came out in the summer about the budgets, just keep things simple, surely. That's what I think.
I mean, I think they said that in the initial article when they announced the digital day, they said that it was due to the EFL's green initiative, and they almost worded it like they've been forced to do it by the EFL, which I didn't believe, because we obviously knew straight away that Cambridge were selling paper tickets, so we knew that the EFL had forced them to do digital tickets, so why would they force us? Also, Dad went down to Ewood to buy a ticket, and the guy explained to him that it's from EFL, it's not from Rovers, they want to push this green initiative. Well, if the EFL was so pushy on this, why did they all of a sudden change their mind with 48 hours to kick off? Why would the EFL do that? Surely they set an initiative, they're going to carry on with it. What else are they saying here?
It is the club's decision, without a doubt.
Yeah.
It's come from the club.
Yeah. What did they say? To allow supporters who have not yet successfully navigated the digital process. So they think that the people, since the tickets have come out, have been trying to navigate the digital process and are still stuck doing it. They've not managed to successfully do it. No, they just don't want to do it.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't have to do it. There's no need to push more people away than what you already have. I'm worried about the attendance on Saturday. I think Cambridge have sold 1,700, and for that potentially to be more than the home attendance, it's scary.
Yeah, it is. At the same time, it's not. You don't feel surprised. You don't feel just kind of like. Yeah, it's probably going to happen, isn't it?
Well, we said when they announced at the start that people won't go. People will just refuse to go if they're doing this. And
yeah,
they just don't listen.
It's not like... Yeah, because there's still a good chunk of our fans, the older generation, that just don't know how to do that. How to buy and use a digital ticket. It's just not...
Well, people enjoy going down to Ewood and going to the ticket office, having a look at Rovers store, and
so why
take that away from people? Plus, if you want to save paper, why don't you do two adults and two kids on the same ticket for a tenner? Why can't you save paper that way and just print it all on one ticket? You just scan it four times. There's other ways to save paper. There's other ways to be more sustainable, shall we say. Digital, I mean, the fact that season ticket, people with season tickets should just be able to put the ticket on the card. I mean, that brings
it. Yeah, this is the most baffling thing. This is, if you got a season ticket, that's on paper. It's already made. It's just a physical ticket.
Yeah.
It's activated for the game.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure they did that last season for the Forest game in the League Cup. I'm sure for that game there was no actual tickets. It was just you use your season ticket on the, on the wood for the league game.
Yeah. So. I mean, why don't they just allow? I mean, for the rounds like this, unless it's a big draw, season ticket holders should get a ticket. I think they should be including your tickets. That's another argument about season tickets, including cup games as well. It's a completely different argument. Whilst the digital process has worked well, with a number of supporters managing to switch to a digital and more sustainable form of ticketing, well, it hasn't worked well because not many people have bought a ticket, so it can't work that well.
It's like this like constant thing about digital more sustainably. It makes it sound like, oh, if you want to pay for a ticket, you're the scum of the earth.
Yeah.
That's how it sounds, doesn't it?
Yeah. But I just feel like with the website problems that we have, with the Wi-Fi at Ewood not being the best, like is this the way forward? Like unless they're gonna actually change the almost like the stability of stuff, or like invest in around the stadium stuff, like would it boost signals? Or I mean, you look at like the actual, a lot of people complain that they have problems with Rovers TV on iFollow, and when you watch other clubs' iFollows, they're nowhere near as bad as Rovers. I genuinely do believe it's like lack of investment at the stadium, like the feed output is poor because of a lack of investment. What else has happened? Rovers store system and store maintenance to take place. So supporters should note the club will shortly be moving to a new and improved website for the Rovers store, which will require us to close the store next week for system and store maintenance. Don't really know why we need to close the store, but new and improved website, it's about time, yeah. As a result, the store will go offline on Sunday, coming back on Monday, which is fine. The store at Ewood Park will be closed from 5 p.m. on Monday 8th until 9 a.m. on Tuesday, so it's only for one night, so that should be fine. The ticket office will still be open. So I was worried when I first read this about the Rovers store changing for like maintenance. All I can think in my head is like back when, I mean, I must have only been a kid when this happened, they changed it to a Sports Direct for a number of seasons, and they were like selling other club shirts at the Rovers store.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm dreaming that. Did that actually happen? Like, surely. I remember it being a Sports Direct, but while I'm reading it out loud, it doesn't sound right in my head. I'm trying to find a picture of it. Sports Direct at Ewood Park, but it's not having it. Or it's not showing it anywhere. Is that it? No, it's not. So yeah, the Rovers store used to be a Sports Direct for like a number of years. But like when they announced this maintenance, the Rovers store, I just thought, please no, do not be this again, because I'm obviously desperate for money. We're doing the Liverpool United legend night. It would just snowball in my head. It was like,
yeah,
we're gonna be selling Liverpool shirts and Man United memorabilia. There'll be four Rovers shirts in corner that you can buy. But this is the problem when we don't have like a club advisor, or like we don't have an active club advisor to come out and address these concerns. Like you're allowed to snowball, and things like happen on Twitter and Facebook, and they pick up pace quite quickly.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's, I feel like I've got a weight off my chest now. Have you got anything to add?
I don't think so. I feel like we've just absolutely ranted for well over an hour, but
yeah. Feels good, doesn't it?
All you can do is be honest, really.
Yeah, I think we just need to be honest, because the problem we're getting to now, or like the stage I'm getting to now, is just I don't care anymore, because we've tried our best to make our feelings known and like voice our concerns, and I can feel like the tide's switching in terms of like more fans are getting onto it and like starting to question what they're doing and be more vocal about that, but also nothing seems to be changing in the background, so it's getting to the it's almost like apathy at this point, where I feel like I've spent all my energy being angry and being like trying to show them what they can and can't do, and it's just not working. I mean,
I'd go with that.
So if you're still here, if you're still smiling at the end of the hour and 15 minutes of us slating the state of the club as it currently is, thank you for joining us. Hope the rest of the start of your 2024 carries on in a with all changes to be a good way, especially Blackburn Rovers' fortunes. And we'll be back. When will we be back, Lewis? What's next on your schedule? What are you working on next?
Rugby next to next weekend. So, probably next week.
What games have we got? What do we play? We've obviously got the Cambridge game. Who else do we play?
West Brom, weekend after it. 13.
Might be a week after we speak about Roberts then. Alright, thank you all for listening and watching. Please like the video and subscribe, it really helps us out massively. And we'll see you all when we come back. We'll see you in a bit.
See you later.
Podcast Network.